We all moved to Barcelona. We wanted to be free for a year and just enjoy life. And this was when I started to paint again. I really had this really need to express myself, to communicate. It's like surviving. I need this to be happy.
Today's guest is the French painter Johanna Dumé. Johanna creates very positive and energetic paintings which somehow draw an image of an artist's life, a certain lifestyle, positivity, and how she is finding the motives for her paintings and how she made her career in contemporary art. She's telling us now in the podcast. Welcome, Johanna Dumé.
Merci.
So, Johanna, where are you from in France?
My French colleagues would say le trou du cul du monde, the asshole of the world, or let's say of the country, the asshole of France, which is actually La Creuse. And it's, I think it's one of the wildest region in the country, and it's in the middle of France also.
But La Creuse is not part of the saying. So it's not like where Jesus lost his lighter or...
No, I think it's where all the animals of the farms of Jesus come from more.
So, and how did art appear in your life?
Really, really early, actually. I was 5 when I really made an announcement to my parents and said, okay, I'm going to be a painter. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice story. So I was in the Kita, which in France, it's not really a Kita, it's called La Maternelle. It's kind of already like starting school. Mm-hmm. I was in the second year and I was quite shy. I always like to be on my own, do my own things and so on. And then I was the favorite of the teacher, which I guess never happened afterwards, Madame Caradé. And she said, okay, we are going to do a theater show at the end of the year. It will be about the Queen of the Flowers, and the Queen will be Johanna. Mm-hmm. And then she said to me, a queen needs a castle. And then they really built a small castle from carton. Mm-hmm. And every day, I think for maybe, I mean, I can't really remember, but I guess 2 months, I would go to school in the studio area to paint the castle. Mm-hmm. And like I do now, basically. Mm-hmm. And I had my little painting outfit and so on. And I was never with the other kids. I was really just painting. And then she really said to my parents, okay, your daughter, she could just do this night and day. And then I realized, true, and that's what I'm going to do. So thanks to this woman, really.
So it was really much more coming from, there was not so much outside influence, I mean, support by her, but...
She basically pointed what do I do? It's called painting. And there is a job for it. So she just put a title on it, basically, mm-hmm. that I could understand. And because, I mean, we don't come from an art world. I don't think I ever been in a museum when I was a child. But this, to be creative and do something, this process of doing something from your hands is called, I don't know, you can call it just painting or you can call it making art. At that time was painting. Mm-hmm. And this is when I understood, okay, if this is a job, I do it.
And why did you decide then later on to, because you studied fashion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How, because the influence of the parents to be a little bit more practical, or what drove you, like, this decision was based on?
I mean, my parents, at first, I wanted to go to an art high school, mm-hmm. and you needed to have some good grades. It doesn't exist anymore, but it's called Art Appliqué. Mm-hmm. And I remember my father said, no, you will go to a normal high school. Being an artist, it's not really a safe job. You don't know. And I said to him, listen, if you don't make me go there, I will end up not giving a shit of anything. I will probably have the shittest job or become a homeless. So let me do what I'm planning on doing. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, okay, show me you can have good grades. Because that was the time I was really rebellious and was not really working hard. And show me you can do it and then go for it. And I did it. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I think in high school I was not painting so much. But fashion was really the way for me to communicate with other people. Mm-hmm. I was really dressed wild. I had dreadlocks. I had fake things in my hair until the floor with like little bells on it. So I would always make noise when I walked like a goat, mm-hmm. and had, I don't know, 5-6 layers of clothing that I would make myself. I was basically my
teacher. You
made
your own clothes, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My teacher said, you are a living art piece. I was really like overdressed mm-hmm. all the time. And then I thought, okay, that's something that interests me. It's how I show the world who I am, what I like, how much colors I love. Although people would really stop me on the street and be like, why are you like this? Mm-hmm. Are you coming from a circus? Or, you know, that was really, I looked like a clown, which I still do. I think this will never go away. So then I think I never wanted to be a fashion designer so much, but I was really interested in texture and colors and learning more also just how to make things by myself. Mm-hmm. And this sounded easy. And going to art school, I don't know, I think I never thought about it.
So you didn't think about, you didn't try. And then where did you study fashion? In Paris?
In Marseille.
In Marseille.
And mm-hmm. this was fantastic. Those was, they were the best years. There was a good school in Paris. They didn't take me. And then Marseille took me. And it was so much fun to be in this city. And I mean, I come from really the countryside where there is not even buses or nothing, right? And then I'm 18 there. I never took really the metro alone before. And I'm just wondering how to move in such a big city. It was great. And the first day of school, I looked to with others. And there was those three people. And we became best friends. And then we were the crew. And we are still really good friends. And yeah, it was wonderful. No regrets.
How was it not to be accepted in Paris?
Fine.
Was okay, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so when did you pick up painting again then? During this period?
No. I mean, I was, of course, this study, it was how to become a fashion designer. It was a lot about being creative, not especially making clothes. I mean, it was also how to talk, express your ideas. Why do you choose this color? It was also mixed with philosophy and so on. And then you had to also, in a way, paint or find a way to express how you wanted to create a collection. So I was painting there, and I remember this teacher, Madame Wild, she also had a big influence on me. She said, oh, here's the artist coming. Never, she never said I was a fashion designer. She always knew I was not going to be fitting the boxes of mm-hmm. being a designer. And when we finished, when I got my graduation in Marseille, with these best friends that I talked to you about, we all moved to Barcelona. We wanted to be free for a year and just enjoy life. And this was when I started to paint again, because I didn't have a sewing machine, so I couldn't really work with textile, but I really had this really need to express myself, to communicate. It's really like it's like surviving. I need this to be happy. Mm-hmm. And then I started to, of course, I had no money. I had a shitty job. So I started to collect wood on the street, old doors and so on. And I was painting on them because paint was easy to buy. I just had a couple of brushes. And I started to make my first exhibitions, actually. I was 20, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where was it?
In Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. But you not only paint on what you find around you, you also paint what you see around you, no? You like
yeah.
transform your life onto the painting in the one you live, but also the one you want to live, no?
Exactly. I never try, you know, it's always, we always say the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to focus on my side of the fence. Mm-hmm. And I don't try to find inspiration too far away. I'm interested in finding it in everything that surrounds me. For example, mm-hmm. this setting here, we are on a table, we drink coffee, red chairs and so on. This can be a beautiful painting. And so I paint a lot also from memories, my childhood, my time in France, south of France, my time in Berlin when I'm traveling in Denmark. And sometimes exactly they are more like projection, wishes, dreams, but they are always dreams that can be fulfilled, mm-hmm. I think. I never painted me on the mood. Which, I mean,
so who knows? What brought you to Berlin then? And why Berlin? If the city doesn't really fit your The positiveness and energy in your work, it's not really the best, how would you say, the best screen backdrop for yes. for what you're doing, no?
Yeah, but at the same time, I think because it's so tough, I even needed even more to show these kind of dreamy feelings, I think. It's like when you enter my studio, you are really in another world. Also, I share the studio with Manu, who makes this crazy sculpture. So you are in Berlin, but then we are in our little fantasy world. And why Berlin? So I was in Barcelona starting to paint, having shows, and everybody told me, oh, you're an artist, you should go to Berlin. This is the place for artists.
Mm-hmm. When was this? Like in...
10 years ago, I was 21.
Yeah.
And I was really, I'm still really free, but I was just so free that I was like, sure, you know what? Take my bags, move from Barcelona, go to Berlin now, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did it. And it was really, ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't speak German. I didn't have any money. I didn't have an apartment. I didn't know anybody. I was a cleaning lady to start with. And with this, I could buy some paint. And I remember I was buying my canvas on the Turkish market in Kreuzberg. I was buying the fabric there.
And how did you get the cleaning job? You listed on
Craigslist,
yes. Really? Yeah.
First I knew a friend of a friend. She was from Bermuda.
Yeah.
And she was a cleaning lady, and she said, "You can make so much cash." And you see so many people's houses and so on, which was true. So she gave me my first jobs. And then I put an ad on Craigslist. And then, I mean, this can be a nice book also to write about. But some people, it's crazy houses. They make you clean. I clean vomit and full condoms and human shit. I mean, people are also really, really nasty. But then you also meet... I mean, it just was crazy. I don't know. I saw so many apartments. It was fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Until there was this American woman. She was really hysterical, really. And it was too much. And I said, you know what? I can't do it anymore. They drive me crazy. And I stopped the job.
But did you have the plan at this point to make a living of your art? Or didn't even see the possibility of it?
I think I was not thinking about it. I was too young. I wanted to live the life, party, be in the park, make a little bit of money, enough just to buy paint. And I never also really painted to sell or for others. I just painted first for myself.
Yeah.
And this was what I was doing. And yeah. I was really satisfied with it until I got my first offer for a show, which was in a bike shop.
Oh, really? Yeah. How did this come together?
I had this good friend of mine. She was living by Oberbaumbrücke, Kreuzberg, on top of a bike shop where there were all these messengers stopping there and drinking Radler and so on. And they all had this cool style, you know, like really like people from the Tour de France and so on. And she had something going on with one of the guys, and we were just hanging out with them all the time. And then one said, basically somebody wanted to buy the shop and they had to save the shop and to make an event to raise some money. And they knew I was a painter and they said, would you like to show something? And I did.
Did these riders, for example, made it on the painting then? Did you make like...
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was
okay,
paintings about,
okay.
about mm-hmm. messengers, guys, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but also really old school Tour de France images. Mm-hmm. Somebody with a flat tire, which happened to all of us. And they were, I think I showed only four works, maybe. And then a guy who then appeared to have a gallery in Mitte bought two. And one work was 50 euro.
Oh, wow.
And they were, let's say, A4 size. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, I buy two for 80. And I was like, deal. Mm-hmm. And then I had, you know, 80 euro in my pocket. I was really proud and really happy. And this was the day before I turned 25.
Mm-hmm.
So not so long ago.
Yeah.
And that was my plan, to sell a work before being 25. I did it. And then I moved on.
And so, but you really go with the flow, you live your life, and then this life around you finds its way to you express it on the canvas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't really follow a certain, I mean, there are certain series. There's one you you do in Denmark. And on the other hand, you also have a very clear routine, no? You go in the summer always to the same place, and then you also paint what's around there, no? The clothes, drying and the...
The food I eat there, directly from the fishermen, the shells I collect every year. The colors of the Scandinavian summer are really also different from the colors from Berlin. I also paint mostly outdoors there, mm-hmm. which is also really fun to work with oil outside. It's like the expressionist, basically, back in the days. You have to work much faster. You don't have the same luxury of being in the studio. Sometimes there is wind, sand come all over your canvas, and then you have a bird who shits on your canvas, and then it's raining, and then you have to bring everything. Like, you have really to work with the time, the light, the weather, and I love it. It's really good exercises.
In this moment, then, in this bike shop exhibition, your first sale there, you had the feeling there's a possibility of continuing there, yeah. Or how did it continue? When did you really?
I had a job in. I was a baker and a cook in.
Oh, you did pastries, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So at that time, that was my job, twice a week in Mitte in Weinerei. And this was enough money that I can pay my rent and have a little studio. So that was nice. And then exactly this guy who bought these two paintings was like, yeah, I have a gallery in Mitte, you can show works there and so on. Mm-hmm. And
so you were, which gallery was this? You had your first show?
It's called Ill, I-L-L, Gallery. Uh-huh. I don't know if he still exists. His name is Lutz.
Okay.
But it was, you know, it was like really off the radar.
But you also you looked at a lot of painting. No, you are really into because you also collect now,
yeah.
And you are closely. Even you didn't study art. You were always very much observing what was happening in painting. No.
Yeah, I think I love beautiful things, beautiful clothing, furniture, landscapes, and art is really talking to me. So. I mean, beginning of my 20s, to go in a gallery was difficult for me. I never feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. You get there, it's really white. There's people at the front desk. They look at you like, who's this homeless arriving? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. This is how I felt. And so I was maybe going for some openings, and especially for the free drinks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, that was fun. But there is other way to look at art than going to a gallery. Now this is what I like to do, but you can go to museums, it's in books, it's kind of in a way everywhere. And also, what is art, what is not art? Just things that, I don't know, I like to find beauty everywhere. Mm-hmm. But of course, I always looked somehow at art. Although in the same time, it's like the more you look, the more it's difficult to create, mm-hmm. I have the feeling. So when I'm in the studio, I can't look at what the others are doing. Otherwise, I can't focus on what is my style. Why do I want to show? Then you think the others are better than you. Then you get too much inspired and so on. So it's also, there is always a limit when to look at and when to focus on your own work. And I think it's good to find this balance.
Mm-hmm. Now here for Gallery Weekend, we show sort of one booth of your work, which is a restaurant scene, which I think is a very interesting series where you somehow capture a past experience. Then there is a sort of a cupboard, or how would you call it, a schrank, no?
Yeah, cupboard.
And then also a portrait of Manu, your partner and studio mate, who, and maybe your muse,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And did I miss something?
And
a paravent, yes. And Manu is sort of a little bit hidden behind the paravent because he's nude.
Is it a reason why he's hidden? Because he's nude?
Is he?
Yeah, I guess the idea of those pieces, it's almost like you enter to somebody's home. Mm-hmm. So this paravent has two sides. One side is like the exterior. You have a door and there is windows, and then you see what's happening behind. And the other side of the paravent, it's inside of somebody's home, and it's a closet.
Yeah.
So if you put the paravent that we have the entrance door, and it's the first piece on the booth, you really enter, and then you have a cupboard, like you said, that you can open, and it's in somebody's kitchen, and then you have this 3-meter dinner scene. So you feel really much you are entering into somebody's home. And then in somebody's home, there are people, and sometimes we are naked. And that's also this idea that usually you use a paravent to undress.
Mm-hmm.
So is now Manu is exactly behind the paravent, drinking coffee in the morning, naked. And it's a moment of intimacy that I wanted to share, I guess, with the public, that he likes it or not, it's too late. It's there.
But it's also, I mean, on a certain sub-level, I would say it's also sort of playing with this male gaze and female gaze, because usually the male Maler first is sort of painting his muse in nude, and now you, Maler is a little bit older than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Often this Maler first has a younger female partner. But then also the show we did a couple of years ago here at the chapel, you made a painting of this famous painting by Martin Kippenberger in the Paris Bar, which back then sort of created a little bit of a scandal, because he didn't paint that painting himself. He asked a poster painter to paint it for him. And then Daniel Richter painted the painting of this. But we have this sort of chain of male artists who are also, I would say, carry their masculinity in their work a little bit, you know, in their attitude. And that's not really only subconscious that you put yourself in that chain, no?
Yeah, it's boring. I mean, it's time to break those rules also. I was always rebellious in this matter, and I think it's also not really breaking such a big rule, but I'm so tired of always seeing female nude paintings that was painting that since hundreds and hundreds of years ago, always painted by male. But maybe also as female, I mean, the female body is beautiful, there is no doubt, but often it's also really sexualized, and I think it's really, it's time to move on. It's really getting boring. And maybe as young female, if I go to a show, I want to see something else. And then that I paint maybe what I want to see. And I think the male body is wonderful. And in this case, it's Manu that I decide to paint, because exactly, it's my muse. He really inspires me, and I love him. I love his body, is the, you know, like the things that are wrong, the things that are good, everything. I want to paint it, although it could be interesting to make a series of different men. And yeah, it's also, there's always some humor in my work, and it's also hard to break all of this. Now I'm the young woman who paints older men, and I also collect actually male nudes, and I think it's...
Where do you find them?
Different. Actually, I never really plan on doing this, but it just happens, because I don't know, but they are also not nudes that are...
Oh, you mean you collect, you have a male nude by Tal A, for
example,
right? That's also in the Paris Bar painting, right? In
exactly,
the back of it. So you made paintings of other artists' paintings, which are the backdrop of the restaurant scene somehow. You projected in there.
Exactly.
And one of it is a male nude by Tal A. Tal A, yeah.
Yeah, and then there is Boyce, there is Matisse, there is me, there is
Picasso
Jonathan
made
Meze.
Made nudes, I mean, very phallic.
Karel Appel made amazing new. I mean, you know, it's not new. And what interests me, it's how to also paint nudity without sexualizing the body. And because I can hear, you know, you can see like a painting of a female body, and then guys are like, oh my God, she looks so hot. Or, you
but
know?
There are no female nudes of you, not that I know of.
There is one of myself made in Barcelona a long time ago.
Okay, I don't know this one.
It's in my home in France. Yeah. Nobody knows it. It's just, you know, so many times people have to judge the painting, saying, oh, she doesn't look good enough on this painting. Oh, she looks fat. Oh, she looks hot. And it's a painting. I mean, people should let go of judging how a body should looks like. And I think when you paint male, we don't even judge. I mean, probably people say, oh, the penis is too small. I don't know. But I want to get over this. I want to get over judging how a body should looks like. And to bring some humor, let's say this portrait that these paintings that Thaler made, I find them also funny because the one I have, for example, the man is purple, kind of in a forest, shaking. I don't know. It's interesting.
And in this, you at some point you started a restaurant series where you take the bill, the receipt from the dinner, and sort of collage it into the painting, and then the painting is an interpretation or like a memory tableau of that evening. How did you come about this? What was the first one? When did it start?
It started with our show in 2021, where the Paris Bar was. Just to come back also to the Paris Bar, why I had this idea was I was sitting in the Paris Bar. Actually, I was sitting during that dinner that I painted of the Paris Bar and put the receipt. So it was all in one evening that I had all those fantastic ideas. And I was looking at this painting from Daniel Richter. And I was like, you know what? We need a new, fresh version. And it's Paris Bar. You know, it's also a little French. It's always guys who painting. So let me be the next one who do it and let me do it better. That was, and I think mine is a fantastic version that I painted. And then exactly then in the back of the painting, I put all these paintings that I wish to see in the Paris Bar, or let's say my own collection of artists that I like. And then I had this dinner and I invited the people with whom I was during that event, and it was maybe 500 euro. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck, it's also a lot of money, 500 euro. How do I make money out of this dinner, kind of? Because now also, you know, I mean, when I was 25, I was kind of always broke, which was also fun. And now it's working really well. I make some really good money with my art. And I feel like I'm really stuck in this capitalistic world. I'm really in the middle of it. Being an artist, you know, it's not like, I mean, you are free, but at the same time, you have to pay your tax. You are a freelancer. It's a business. You have to work with galleries if you can or if you want to. And sometimes you make a solo show, it's all sold out, and it's a lot of money. And I wanted to play with capitalism, and I do it also with my fashion series. Mm-hmm. And in this matter, it was, okay, a real moment where I invite friends that we will always remember. It's better than an Instagram post or so on. How do I even make money with a real dinner? And then it was by creating these dinner scenes where then a collector will pay much more money to buy the paintings. So it's kind of like eating for free.
Yeah, like kind of Ed Kienholz approach. So, but the Paris Bar also is this projection or place of an artist bar, which I think had it's a great place, but it had its peak. Important moment long time before the two of us. So you also play with this projection of or the cliché of an artist life and the idea of an artist life.
I don't know. I feel like my life is a cliché somehow.
Or like in the imagination of it, you know, Paris Bar and then...
I mean, I remember Manu brought me there on one of our first dates. I didn't know the place. And I mean, you know, exactly like you arrive in your 20s, you don't know anything about Germany, or about Berlin and so on. So you need people to show you around. And he told me the story of the place and I look at the works and so on. And I guess... I'm also really nostalgic for, I wish I was also in the 30s or in the 40s or I don't know, being more in this group of artists, having a place where we could meet and smoke in the bar and talk about art and so on. But now everything is too big. There is no such a place anymore. Or let's say I didn't find it. Mm-hmm. And I guess, yeah, it's also about this nostalgia. And nowadays you can see so many people, young people going to the Paris bar. So maybe we are all looking for this kind of memories, or we all want to be part of a place where we can go and meet people that are like us, and you are never really alone. You know, it's like a living room for artists and so on.
So interesting is also at the Galerie Medici, you painted yourself a castle. Right? I mean, it's also a little, because then we think of Georg Baselitz, who lived in a castle where the Hall Art
For
Foundation
30
is
years,
now,
yeah.
Where you also went, right?
Yeah.
So how, and I think also, I think, yeah, there's a painting of yours we sold to the Hall collection. Yeah, yeah, I remember because of that, actually.
Also a dinner, yeah, that was in Aix-en-Provence.
Yeah, so... You also want to provocate a little bit with this, like you, the paint, sort of Pippi Longstockings. Ich mal mir die Welt, wie sie mir gefällt. You know, I paint the world how I want to have it. I mean, it's, you know, in these days of, I don't know, political themes and the world's problems we live in, you paint yourself a castle.
And it's pink. I mean, I don't really do things I like for others. So when I do something, I don't know if it will provocate or really touch really other people. I do this, like as I said, I was 5 years old and I painted a castle.
Yeah.
Because I was the queen of the flower. The world was like such a beautiful place. And now I'm in Berlin since 10 years, but I didn't find a place that I can call home. And my dream is to buy a castle. Mm-hmm. And I guess until I don't have it, I will make one from papier-mâché or from carton. And like in this matter, it was oil paint on carton. And yeah, I'm interested to create a beautiful world and to invite people in. And what was interesting, it brought so many people, this installation at the gallery, people who never entered a gallery before. So in a way, it's like the world is fucked up outside. Come to the pink castle for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Life is just a bit better here. The sun is always shining. It's like Teletubbies. No, it's a little bit like...
So escapism. Then, also, your work is sort of providing escapism to escape
so.
Into the
I mean, we can see this
imagination.
When people go really crazy with my table scenes.
Yeah.
It's really, they're all like, oh, that's my life, or that's the dream, or it's me on holidays. It's always like these good moments. I think it brings this to people. It's just positivity, good memories. I wish I was there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then also human communication, no?
Yeah, it's also... I like to paint things that are quite simple, that a child can understand, that my parents can understand. They didn't study, they don't know anything about art, but still they can read my work. And then you can go further and find, you know, like say, okay, this reminds me of that and so on. But I think communication, the work that I do can talk to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it also with the print that we sold. It's amazing. That
also
there are
table
more,
scene, yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than 1,000 people who wish to have this work and, I mean, got themselves a print. It's I find it really beautiful. And then you can call me a popular artist.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what I became. And why not?
And how did you come about these, I mean, this table as a connecting element? How did you come about this visual... It's because it's visually pretty strong, these like scene of a table scene. How did you come about it?
The first one I did was because of love.
Mm-hmm.
I was in France for a month and just started to date Manu, and I was really missing him. And the way to express my love was somehow to paint all the things that we like to eat. I think drinking and eating, it's what always brings people together. In France, we say... se retrouver autour d'une bonne bouteille, to meet around a good bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, always, you know, it's where decisions were made. It's always people sitting at a table, at least having water or a coffee. It's this table, this piece of furniture in between people brings actually people together, mm-hmm. closer. And this was my first still life. It was all the things that we like to eat. I guess food... is also so similar, no? This, when you enjoy the food, it's like, I don't know, should I say this?
It's no, it's also like kind of an archaic practice, no? To live, you need to eat to, but then when you do this together, it's more like, you know,
it
almost
better.
Like sitting around a fire or so. And you mentioned before, sometimes you sort of brands appear in your work, like Chanel, Hermes,
Aldi.
Aldi as well, yeah. Yes. How what about it?
This was something that fascinates me. It's that people are so eager to buy a Chanel bag that they will go for the fake version. And I find fakes really a wonderful object, kind of like an art piece by itself. And I was just reflecting what an icon used to be in the past, let's say an image of Jesus and so on. This was what an icon, you know, if you look in the dictionary, this is what it used to be. But now if you ask people what it's iconic, you mm-hmm. know, they would say, oh, Chanel number 5 or the Birkin bag from Hermes. This is iconic in our culture. Mm-hmm. Those are the our icons we are living with. So I created, I just painted those icons to also question them. I mean, there is really a science, how do you say?
But is it a bit like the castle too? You don't have one? So you just painted? You just painted for yourself?
Yes, because I'm also part of this. You know, the more I look at fashion magazines and they tell you, you need these new shoes this summer. Oh, and you need these sunglasses. You will be looking better. And with this bag, you will be happier. I also believe in it. Yeah. You know, the power of words and magazines, they tell you you'll be happy with this new Prada bag. And I would say yes. And then, you know, you're happy and then you want a next one. And I also question this, how this logos, they mean something. You want to show you have this logo and you want to show you belong to this elite, to this kind of the world, and that you are, I don't know, happy, successful, independent. It really tells so much about you. It's also how you communicate with others. And then you have the people who have the fake one, which I think sometimes you can see how fake it is, but still, you know, it says Dior on it.
And how comes the Aldi reality into it?
Because usually, I mean, I was actually in Lidl and I saw this woman with this fake Gucci bag there. But at the same time, you could have a woman with a real Gucci bag in Aldi too. Aldi brings all the worlds, or Lidl brings all the worlds together. And they are also multi-millionaires industry who also makes tons of money, as maybe probably more than Hermes. And then you have also these logos of Aldi, Lidl, and so on. They are so strong. They are mm-hmm. so catchy. They are also iconic.
Yeah.
Really.
So you want to, and you know that it's from an artist, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I remember reading that he actually did this. It was really a scandal because he made an art piece. Basically, he's an artist for a brand. And this is like selling your soul, you know, a little
bit.
Yeah,
I remember there's a myth that he put 500 Deutschmark into the coffee cup of the Art Academy. To sort of, how would you say, be redeemed or something like this. So, but now, I mean, interesting is that...
I would question fashion, came to me.
Exactly, when you did this, it seemed so far out of reach to be, you know, you dreamed your little world there, so to speak. But now you just did a big project for Hermes mm-hmm. In Sylt.
Yeah, together with Manu.
And that you did many fashion collaborations already, no? Or a couple.
Yeah, a couple, and also got, for example, gift, you know, like Prada would give me a bag and so on after me painting them. So it's also, I'm questioning our behavior towards fashion, but then fashion sees it and said, oh, we like it. Also Hermes, exactly, I painted a couple of bags together with them and so on. I mean, paintings, not real bags, not yet. So then they come to me. It's this is just how the irony of the world. You can criticize something, but it becomes anyway a publicity for them.
Yeah, but criticize, I mean, it's also sort of a dream machine, no?
Yeah, I mean, I don't say I would maybe criticize. I think I was questioning more because I'm also part of the system. I mean,
you did paintings which they're like, you paint a small Chanel bag and then the cost is equal to the Chanel bag, right?
Yeah. Now, yes.
Or that was a plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think you think about this small sculpture that
I painted
on zinc.
Yeah, with a metal, painted on some found material, no?
Yeah, I think Chanel raised its prices, so I'm not yet there. But if I sell it in 2-3 years, I think we can equalize.
And in the project in Sylt, you included Manu to join, right? You did it together.
Yeah, so Hermès really asked Manuel and me to create a window, and as he's a sculpture or installation artist, it really made sense. So basically, the idea was because Sylt is also a seasonal shop, so it closes in the winter, and the idea was that the story was that in winter, the seagulls of the island just took refuge in the shop and are now living with the fancy Hermes bags. And so Manuel created all these sculptures of seagulls that are flying around the shop, that made babies inside of a bag, that are eating and wearing this little Hermes carré and so on. And I kind of worked on more the background for this project and also to sketch the whole idea and so on. It was really a work that we made together.
And how was the experience working with brands? Because they're so extremely careful and protective about their brands.
Yeah, it's not easy. And I would not do it with any brands. I also do it with brands that I feel we have a connection with. And I think when Hermès came to us, they also really understood this idea of craftsmanship that Manuel has in his sculptures and so on. I mean, we were on the same page, but of course you can't show alcohol, cigarettes, nudity or anything that is provocative, but they still wanted us to be provocative.
Mm-hmm.
So it was how
like
to play.
Thin red line, yeah.
So I made small babies inside of an Hermes bag, small baby seagulls. It's difficult, but it's a dream of mine to work with such a brand that I learned in fashion school that I find also really amazing. So I'm putting my ego down, let's say, and mm-hmm. I try to be calm and to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also happy that I can just make my art where I'm in the studio, nobody will tell me what I have to do, and I can really be free to paint whatever I want.
And how you ever short of impressions or inspiration or influence?
Yeah, it happens once for a month. Uh-huh. Where I think it was 2 years ago, I had a lot of solo shows. It was everybody wanted something from me. And I mean, let's face it, it came quite fast also with me. I mean, I'm working with Instagram where I have also a big reach. And then now there are a lot of collectors who are interested. But I'm just also a human being and sometimes I can't take it. It's too much. And for months I was really burnt out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized to do nothing and to stop painting made me so sad that go back to the studio, it's actually the best moment. So
and
I
it came
just
automatically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what when you said it came like almost overnight, what do you think, what was the turning point? Or when did it really take up?
It was actually not Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It was this studio we had before, Villa Heike in Hohenschönhausen.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Place?
It was very almost like a Wunderkammer experience to come and sort of you both sort of lived the art there, I would say.
Yeah, and also this house, I mean, it's on the same street as the Stasi prison. I mean, it's a weird space. And I was looking for a new studio back in the days, and then we saw this ad on eBay Kleinanzeigen of this atelier. And yeah. Then you had these Greek columns, and it was so beautiful. And I was like, that's a fake, you know? But Manu was like, no, let's contact the guy. And this space was so beautiful, was so timeless that we needed to take it.
It was some crazy fabricant owner who expressed himself with building this in the 20s or something.
Exactly,
no?
Yeah. And he had a huge garden and palm trees and so on. And now actually Lidl took over the ground and it's a Lidl shop next to the villa. But the villa is still alive and was abandoned for 20 years and then took over, like the architect renovated everything during 4 or 5 years. And the fact that we took this space, this historical studio, changed everything. But the fact was that it was around 2,000 euro a month and I had only 3,000 euro in my account.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to take a risk, like I had to gamble a little bit to see if it would work. And of course, you know, I went to the Sparkasse, the German bank, and they said, oh, you are such a risk. No, we can't give you any money. You have just, you are an artist and your boyfriend is an artist. You guys are so broke. We will give you 800 euro or something. No, great. I can't even pay.
Oh, because you needed to have money for the money, down payment.
Yeah, for the down payment, and also to pay the rent at least for 6 months or something.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you take a big space out of the blue. Will it work? Will it not work?
Yeah.
So I went back to France and my parents helped me to get a credit. We created a, you know, we had to bullshit a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 15,000. So we could move in and not stress about paying the rent. And really the first week we moved in, everything changed.
How?
It was a couple of artists moving, maybe 2-3 artists moving in. And the area downstairs is a sort of gallery. And they opened to the public the villa, mm-hmm. who was then closed for 20 years. And so many people came, maybe 1,000 people came. And I remember we were on the penthouse and we also opened our studio to the public. And there was a woman who worked for the Tagesspiegel.
Mm-hmm.
And she listened to me talking upstairs about the works. And I was talking German, you see. Worked out. And the day after she said to her colleague, okay, we will write a story about that girl.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of months after, it was their Kunstmagazin Tagesspiegel and it was an article.
Who was the author?
Birgitte Rieger.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote, it was 5 pages in the magazine. And this really changed the first gallery, which was Kevinik,
mm-hmm.
Contacted me, came to the studio and
so on.
Based
on this publication, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Instagram was really helping, mm-hmm. to show the world and so on, but still it's a painting or it's photos. It's not really real. How credible are you? Mm-hmm. With Instagram, you can't really know if you don't know the work in real. But then when you have a good German newspaper coming and really writing about you, it makes your work, your practice much more credible and real. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, no, I think that it's very much about the possible. I think it's a numbers question. You know, you opened the house. You had the open studio, and then so many people came, and you only need the
right person.
The right person, not necessarily in the right person in having influence. But the right person to understand the right work, you know.
Yeah, and so, to believe in what you do.
Yeah, no, but also, you know, if that's why I think Instagram has these strengths, because you can share with so many people at the same time, mm. something you otherwise, it's difficult to share, no?
Yeah.
And then you have all these people coming to the studio, and then this one person multiplies it through the newspaper, and then another person sees it, and multiplies it through the gallery and so on and so forth. So that's why I think it's so in the end it was just important that your work gets seen, no?
Yeah. Yeah. And
Kevinik, you did a show then or?
It was you see they have this gallery and then they have a little next like a off room.
Mhm.
And it was, so it's like just one space with, I don't know, 12 meter high ceiling. And there I showed, yeah, my first works. And I think a couple of months after, you were also in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had our first group show and so on. So 2019, 2020, it's where things moved. Although I could sell my work by myself through Instagram.
Yeah.
This, I was already raising money so I could keep on paying my rent and so on. But
how did this work? You finished a painting and then you posted it and someone wrote, can I buy it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is happening still every day since. It's been years that I'm getting, each time I post on Instagram, I'm getting always a couple of emails for people who wants to buy, but I decided to stop to sell through Instagram.
Why?
Because of course you make much more money, right? I mean, you get 100% of the price of the work, but it's also at the end, to make money is great, but this is not the point of my paintings. When they go out in the world, I would like that people see it. And with a gallery, with a show, you have really hundreds and hundreds of people who can see the work. And of course, you have only one person who buys it at the end.
Yeah.
And of course, it's expensive and it's not always for everybody. Art is also a luxurious item,
mm-hmm.
but at least it's free to go and look at it. And you can really inspire so many people. And this is what matters for me. And at the same time, I don't want to also just paint and it randomly goes to somebody's home. When you paint in a series, you want to also, for me, for myself, I want to see how it looks like in another space.
So it's not so much about that the gallery is more selective on selling to a more relevant amplifier, so to speak, you know, to like influencing collectors in Asia who then have a museum and then there are more people come to see it, who, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
it's more about really having the physical presence of the exhibition. Yeah,
it's both. I mean, definitely. I mean, also the show we had and the, where you could sell the works, I think it's amazing. The paintings are in so many good collections, and this is something I can't do by myself, definitely. I mean, now they also follow me on Instagram, right? Maybe I could if I really wanted to, but it's too much stress to sell to send stuff to Asia. Yeah, I also like that people see things in real. It changes everything to see a work in real.
Mm-hmm. And so what's next? What are you working on right now? Or what else is coming up?
So we show together in new works for Gallery Weekend.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you for taking us on this journey. And I think when you have a, how many meters big painting?
Six.
6 meter big painting to paint, then I don't want to take up more of your time and don't stand in the way of... and it's going to be a dinner table painting?
Yes, but it will be not one canvas. It will be separated in 12 small canvases,
mm-hmm.
but representing one scene. And the idea, it's like in a dinner, you share with people. And this idea is that this painting will be shared in 12 pieces and the collector is allowed to only buy one piece. And one piece is 1 meter by 85, which is also fits better in a home than 6 meters. So it's the concept also of sharing.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I hope you're not only doing this once, so we can also do it in Seoul or in.
And we can go big. We can do the whole space, like 12 meter table, really.
Yeah, but you also do some sort of a performative dinner before. You know, like in happening, which then transforms into the painting?
No, this one will be really from my head.
Okay.
This one, it's more about I'm choosing a couple of colors that I think really fit together.
So it's made up. It's not really based on a real... Because
no.
Aix-en-Provence, for example, you mentioned.
Yeah.
That was really an actual dinner, which then turned painting.
Exactly. Yeah. The one we showed together in April, where we ate at Roots.
Yeah,
It's all Root.
That's one at the gallery we
Yeah, know. That's yeah. also a real moment.
Yeah,
so there is both.
But this one is. Don't you think it's like, don't you need the aura of the transformation of the energy like really happening? You know, you can't. I don't know. Maybe you can make memories up too.
Yeah, this one will be. I also liked, you know, when you work with some restaurants, sometimes I have to go with what people ate. You know, I will not made up. I really painted what people ate and how the restaurant looks like. And sometimes I feel the colors are also a bit boring. This one will be more about me choosing 5 colors that I love and how it's more a color exercise, how to work and create a dinner with 5 different colors.
Like a dream dinner.
Yeah.
Could be the other way around, you know.
First. And then this would become a real dinner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Thank you, Johanna. Thank you so much. And looking forward to see this painting becoming real.
Me too.